Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Every Tuesday, we have public discussions on issues of concern in and out of the criminal justice arena. These topics are discussed in the audience, and the audience is afforded an opportunity to have their voices and their opinions heard. We're going to have back on with us today Kimberly Biggs. She is the founder of From Prison to Purpose out of Mississippi. So I'm hoping that you will, the audience, will call in to provide feedback as everyone's voice matters. And the call-in number is 657-383-1630. This time of the year is very depressing for many people who have either loved ones inside the penal system or people who have been in the penal system in past years. And for those of you who are out in the streets without a place to stay or have loved ones that are missing, whatever the case may be, this is the time we want to talk about it. We want to support one another in these critical times, hard to deal with, especially around the holidays. We want to support one another. We want to let people know that there are ways to get that support. And even though there's a lot of cold people in society today that could care less about someone's situation, there are just as many that are out there trying to do the right thing, trying to make it possible for everyone to enjoy their holidays and for everyone to know that they have support behind them during these critical times hard to deal with. We have people that are incarcerated that have no family, and many that do not have even Christmas cards, that do not have even pen pals, that do not have any support whatsoever throughout the penal system. There are many people incarcerated who are hidden away in cells in places that no one even knows about because they have no one out there keeping up with them. So some of these issues are going to be discussed today, as well as we're going to be learning more about From Prison to Purpose with Kimberly Biggs. So right now we are going to have Kimberly come on and introduce herself again to the audience for those of you who did not hear her the last time she was on. Kimberly, are you on with us?
I am. How are you today?
Good. How are you, hon? I would like to have you once again introduce yourself to the audience and let them know a little bit about yourself and your program, From Prison to Purpose.
Yes. I'm Kimberly Biggs, and I founded the organization From Prison to Purpose, which helps to assist former incarcerated people back into society by assisting them with mental health services, helping them with housing, job readiness, workforce development, and even some entrepreneurship, trades, and acquisitions. So, but yeah, we're having a lot of rain, so I'm having a little bad phone connection. It's been raining in Mississippi for the last 2 days.
But, you know, I heard you've been getting a lot of really wicked weather down there in those areas,
yes.
Alabama, Mississippi. I had forgotten all about that.
Yes, ma'am. And so, and we're facing eviction. So at one of the houses that we house people, you know, I told you I started the GoFundMe about 6 weeks ago when we found out about the situation. Rapid rehousing and the rent program denied the ladies of their application to receive the housing assistance or rental assistance. And so we are down to until January the 2nd, I think it is, to try and recompense the money that is owed for the house that we're occupying for the program. So yeah, we've been out in this wicked weather, you know, trying to get donations, road blocking, did a few things over in Jackson, Mississippi, did a workshop training over there for a community that brought us in some funds, but we're still some short. And so we wanted to be able to you know, put that out there, because even through these trying times, it's the Christmas holidays for some, and my ladies and their children are just hoping to have a roof, you know, over their head throughout the holidays and time to come. So
one of the things I wanted to ask you, Kim, have you been posting that that GoFundMe? Has it been on Twitter and other social media sites other than Facebook? And I noticed
we're not on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We've been having, you know, advertising it. And like I said, in these rural parts, I've been doing it on most social media bands that we're on, like Instagram. You know, I've had a couple people sharing it to their pages and spaces. But, you know, there's just so much going on across and abroad. And then being an organization, you know, trying to tap into, you know, local funding and grants. But, you know, it's a lot of red tape. We found some money that we may be able to tap into, but it takes some time, allocated time, about 3 months, 90 days through American Rescue. It'll take that long to even get the application accepted and, you know how that goes. But that will help us in the future to secure, you know, spots and ahead of time, you know, for the oncoming year, you know, later springtime, we should be approved with some funding through there. So that's what we've been working on pretty much for the last couple of weeks since I've talked to you. Still been doing the work. I did a Black Leadership Summit this past week, and it was really good. Worked out a lot of community people. I was able to brush some shoulders and, you know, try to get. So it's always this time of the year with people being out of the office already for the holidays, not looking to come back into their office until the first of the year. You know, it just kind of that type of pivotal season, you know, but we still working it. We still have faith and hoping that some things come through.
Okay, I wanted to mention too that I think it might be good to continue to post it on Facebook, because I remember seeing it on Facebook and I shared it as well, but I haven't seen much of it. I haven't seen any of it since. And sometimes it gets buried in all the messages and the things that are coming through. So it might be good to post it again. And if you don't have a Twitter account, I will post it on Twitter myself and Instagram, because that around this time of the year, there is so much on Facebook. There's so much in social media and email, and posting it once is not going to be enough. But again, talk a little bit about what brought you to founding your organization from Prison to Purpose.
Well, being a formerly incarcerated person myself, when I went to prison, that's when I really found out, you know, the purpose that I had in the world. You know, not saying that that was a great thing to go to prison, but sometimes when your environment or your family situation, sometimes it for me, I'm going to talk about me, it was just a place for me to really get still and my brain to start running, overthinking. I had a time to just kind of sit there, and I couldn't understand, you know, being there and what I thought. You know, when you think about prison, you hear about people getting up at 5 in the morning. You had to stand up beside the bed. You have to keep everything intact. It was totally different. It was just more like a deranged place that people ran around freely and did exactly what they wanted to do. It was more horrific than, you know, actually being on the streets and being free, you know, in the real world. But in this place, you're more, you know, secluded and barricaded, but it's so much worse than, you know, the outside world. And I wanted to be a help to someone else, because there were so many ladies that were locked up or behind the bars that, yes, they, you know, they fell short someplace in their life that landed them in prison, but they were much like me. You know, they had life. They still wanted to live their life. They still wanted, they wanted to be reformed. You know, they wanted to make a difference. You know, they wanted to go back and, you know, have self-esteem and self-sufficiency again. And I just thought, you know, by being pen pals with some of the ladies at first, you know, some of the ladies would write me and I would write them back, or I would try to, you know, work a job or something to put $25 at a time on that circle of ladies' books. It started like that, and then a couple ladies got out and didn't have anywhere to go. One committed suicide. One ended up back on the streets. And I just wanted to, you know, be a pillar of hope, because here it is. I'm back out in the world, and I dressed it up. I made it look good, because if I allowed my appearance, or if I allowed myself to be back in the same places or around the same people, I knew that I too would fall short again. I knew that I would end up back doing the things that are doing worse than the things that landed me in prison, you know, my very first time. And I just started, like, advocating, like, writing my story, writing in my journal. And every day I would post to make myself feel better, because I didn't have anyone to ask me how I was doing. I didn't have anyone to ask me how could they help me, or how could they bless me, or how could they, you know, or just, you know, hear, you know, what I was thinking, or how was, you know, what I didn't have and how they could make it better. I didn't have those things. And so I started, you know, wanting to be that for other people. And I didn't have anything, but I did have resources from all the places that I would go to find housing and what that was like. I wrote it down, you know, the things that I would do, you know, better to help somebody in ways that the people could help, you know, us better when we come out. So I just started doing the work like that, and it grew on me. People started reaching out to me to kind of like work the, they would get grant money, but they needed people on the ground to actually do the footwork. And a lot of people would contact me to do contracts with them to, like, get in communities and organize for the families of the incarcerated person. I just started getting different trainings, mediation training, organizing training. I would sit in on classes like trauma classes, became a peer counselor. Then I became a reentry counselor, case manager. And I just started putting it all together to find my own program and to actually start doing the work and actually doing case management from homes to help some people on the inside. Because the case managers that they have inside the prison don't really be case managers. They're just there from whatever time to whatever time to say they're on the clock. They don't really do the work, you know, defined work that's needed to help us when we come out, you know, such as goal setting, mediating back into the community, trying to find a place for the people to go that they may, you know, have some hope in growing versus sending them out to a homeless shelter. And so I, you know, started being a part of committees, policy groups for the state, and I just started doing the work that I wanted to be the change. I had to be the change that I needed to see, or to help others to be able to change. And so that's how it all began. And I've been doing the work pretty much. I didn't know how to go about getting grants. And this is what happens, you know, when you are just, you know, have shared lived experiences, you just be more focused on doing the work. It wasn't so much about, you know, organization or who I'm connected with. You know, you run into that a lot. I found that I run into that a lot, like with a lot of bigger organizations. I was hired by an organization, worked for them for a few years, but they got this big clique thing going on, and one person, one thing happened, and I stood my ground, like, you know, this is not how things should be done. You're getting all this money for reentry and reform, but you know, you're paying people or you're wanting people's stories just to make it look good for the boards. And, you know, I was sick of doing that. You know, I wanted to kind of, you know, maneuver the best way I could. And so I started reaching out to other boards in other states that would allow me to do cohorts, fellowships that would help me be more impactful in the community. And now I'm at this point that I'm learning, you know, how to be structured to receive, you know, the financial funding and the areas that I, you know, the wording, the language is right to receive the funding. So I'm just learning. I'm in the position where I'm learning, but I'm very much impactful in the communities and in the lives of the people who are returning home and some others who have already returned. So that's my day to day.
I'd like to ask, when you first came out, what are some of the barriers that you found when you came out as somebody that was incarcerated, coming out, needing help, trying to get an organization going so you can help others who went through the same thing you went through? What were some of the barriers that you went through as far as people in the community, the reaction, the treatment that you got, and how did you actually get the organization up and running?
Well, the barriers were, you know, you're stigmatized, first of all, because you're a felon. You know, people don't, you know, the help that you need, you know, it's like, I dare you, you know, come back and think that you can do something in the community. But I went back to the places that, you know, people don't go. You know, some people, they sit in the office and they push a pen or they sit on a legislator or, you know, whatever political forum or whatever forum that they on, but they not actually, they never share the shared life, you know, the shared lived experiences. But for me, I founded the organization through people, like just say some other ladies who believed in me. They showed me how to file it, you know, because I was already doing the work. And, you know, they were telling me that it was time that I look at, you know, building myself to be able to learn and organize to do the things that I need to do with this organization. And I mean, I'm brushing and touching, but, you know, just being structural about the running the organization and what it means to have that type of place for people when they come home so that they don't, you know, be brushing off like at a homeless shelter or just in a place where anybody can go. Because when people come out, they need help, you know, first of all, mentally. You know, sometimes you go back to your family, sometimes your family don't receive you. And, you know, the disappointment, the discouragement, the fear of coming out and then having all the added extra stuff like paying a PO or having to pay restitution, you know, and you coming out to a $7.25 an hour job. You got to have somewhere to live. And most of the time people are coming out trying to make it happen and then they fail. And then they spiral back into a position for recidivism or back on drugs that causes them to go back to a criminal life. You know, so my program, I try to remember all of that when I structured the organization to help people by steps, by phases in life, because I could remember the highs and lows for myself. When I first came out, I was scared to death. I didn't want to go back to the hellhole. I didn't want to go back to a place that's inhumane, you know, and I was scared to death. Like, you make one move or you sneeze, you know, the things. And then I found that I was mental about it, because when I would see police or if I would see the prosecuting attorneys or different people in the community, my anxiety would go up. So I knew I needed help. You know, so I started seeking those things and I started putting it together to understand what should come first, you know, in a person's life to get, you know, a better result from people coming out with giving them the A to Z, giving them the wrap services that they need, but giving it to them in the dynamic that they need. I don't need to bring you out and you've been locked up for 5 years. The first thing the next week, I don't need to just push you into a job. I need to be able to get you some mental help. I need to, you know, get you up on a counselor or a therapist to see what they suggest that you need, you know, get you to open up, get you to go to groups, you know, before saying, hey, oh, I'm going to send him straight to work. You have to have different ways. And then you may have a client that come out that's able to go straight to work, you know, but it's not the same. We need people to be, have intakes and be sorted out, so to speak, to understand, you know, what people, you can't treat us all the same. You know, you say, hey, they can get out and get a job. People say, oh, she can get a job. I can bring you back every application that I ever applied for because, you know, you can go back and ask for the application to understand why you didn't get the job. Most people thought I was overqualified from McDonald's to Fred's Dollar Store. You know, nobody, well, because of the language or how I spoke, you know, she's overqualified. Well, we don't want her up in here. Or if I came to a position that I was used to doing because of my felony conviction, I couldn't work. So, you know, being able to give people, returning citizens and former incarcerated people the things that they need to be self-sufficient and that they can have a successful life, you know, and also be able to work abroad by helping, you know, with group after they've overcome the process or after they've gone through the program themselves, they can come back and share their lived experience with another person that's coming through, you know, in the program because, you know, that's just one of the things that I ask that you play it forward, you know, whether it be in group, whether it be sometimes volunteering answering the phone or just however it be. I have different committees for ambassadors and peers to come up under, you know, so it's not just a one-man band. It's just really people, other people who've experienced it too, but found a way to cope because you never get over it. You just learn to cope. You know, I still, at this point, I still get up sometimes and face the wall because the last place I did time, you know, if somebody busts in or you hear keys, you automatically know to jump to the wall. So, you know, I still sometimes do that, you know, and I had to learn that I can't get over it in one day. You know, I can't get over, obviously, in 7 years. So you learn how to cope. You have coping strategies to understand how, you know, to get through it and still live a life, you know, that you work at to be better.
You know, I have my organization, and I encourage my volunteers at all times. First, the first thing I encourage them to do is first to not stereotype the incarcerated population because everyone's situation is different. Secondly, I encourage them to show respect to their clients because these are human beings just like we are, and we have all made mistakes. And I'm sure many people on the outside have committed some form of crime. They either didn't get caught or it wasn't serious enough to go to prison, or they had connections because they came from prominent backgrounds or whatever. So I encourage my volunteers to respect them. When they write to them, not to call them by their last name, not to call them by numbers as they do in the prison and the penal system. Call them by their first name because that's the way I like to be addressed. I don't like to be called Ms. Grant or anything like that. It gives them it gives the incarcerated population, whether it be man, woman, whether it be youth or adults, it lets them know that they're able to relate to the person that's advocating for them. I just received an email yesterday or the day before from one of the new volunteers, and, you know, asking me what type of people that they're going to be working with, you know, how what they're going to be doing. We are a virtual advocacy organization. Everything is done through links. Everything is done through Securus, and all mail going out to the incarcerated population is the return address is always the organization's P.O. box. But people sometimes, because of the media reporting one-sided news, not going into the prisons to actually meet with the incarcerated population, but listening to law enforcement or listening to others, they don't get the full facts. So they're putting information out there. They're putting fear into our communities, into the society. They're putting so much fear into people that it doesn't need to be that kind of fear. We also have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and substance abuses. And a lot of people are in prison either for wrongful convictions or for substance abuse issues or for mental health issues. All of these things can be addressed in long-term residential treatment facilities. You coming out and trying to get yourself started to help others is more difficult than it is for people like myself that are already out here, that are already getting into these organizations, networking with people around the country, learning about situations like this. We may have a loved one incarcerated, but at the same time, we are not that person. So we have a better opportunity to get started. You came out, you're putting up a GoFundMe page to help you financially. because you're struggling to maintain your own living style, maintain your own home, your residence, while also trying to help others that are still behind bars, that are coming out, that need help on the outside. And this is why I am so interested in your story, Kimberly, because you putting out a GoFundMe page, and I believe I might have recommended that you do so. And the reason I recommended it is so that people in society that seem to be so righteous should look at somebody like yourself and they should say, we should help this person, because this person came out. She not only needs help for herself, her own living situation, but she needs help for her organization. So that's why I asked you to come back on again to talk about your situation and the work that you're doing. But I also want to continue to be adamant to the audience and to others out there in society to be adamant about, especially this time of the year, we have a high suicide rate in this country, in the prison, and a lot of it happens around the holidays. There are a lot of people without family members, without anybody. And there's a lot of people that are hidden away in solitary confinement, restrictive housing, and other places that no one even knows about, that are being violated, that are being tormented and tortured. We are a country that everyone at one time called blessed. I don't call this country blessed at all, because this country is a Babylon to me. We hear from other countries. We hear from people in other countries talking about the comparison between their countries and the United States of America. We have the United States of America, who is full of vengeance, full of hatred, full of racism. They, instead of being feeling blessed and trying to help others, they are out there trying to destroy their own citizens, their own people. We have domestic terrorism in this country. It's time for people to wake up and try to start helping people that are trying to help us. And this is one of the, I hope that through your coming on and through others coming on that are trying so hard to do the right thing, I am hoping that you will get that support that you need. I myself, while you were talking, I just put this out on Twitter, and I'm putting it out again on Facebook, and I'm going to keep putting it out there until we see that you're getting some kind of help to do for yourself and to do for others. And I watch godly shows, so-called godly shows like Jimmy Swaggart, that are getting so many billions and billions of dollars putting out there every single day. On, they're selling books all in his name, not in the name of our creator, not in the Most High, not in Jehovah Jireh, but they're getting all these funds for themselves. Jesus came into this world with nothing. And he was in the prisons preaching to the spirits in prisons, as it says in the Bible. So if Jesus can come into this world with nothing and help these people in the prisons, all these people that are preaching on television, they're preaching to the choir. And they're getting all kinds of billions of dollars for doing so. So I ask the audience, and I ask everyone that listens to this today, that listens to this show, to put in $5 here, $5 there, because every little bit will help in this situation. Especially going into a new year, many people are getting a cost of living raise, and they can do it. Because in another couple of weeks, I'm going to do something. But I want all of you out there in the audience listening to go to her GoFundMe page, go to Kimberly Biggs, Prison to Purpose, from Prison to Purpose, and put in $5 or $10 so that she can do the job that she is destined to do, and that is to help others out there in the penal system and in the communities. So, Kimberly, yes. I just want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for doing what you're doing and for all the work that you've been putting into it. And I know it's not easy. As I said before, you coming out of prison doesn't make it any easier to get the support that you should be getting. And that's why many people fall in the first place. Many people stumble because they don't have that support out there, whether it be somebody to talk to, somebody to listen, somebody to help them, whatever the case may be, they don't have it. And that's what we need.
Yeah. In Mississippi, it's an at-will state, so that, you know, that people can fire you. So I've just been trying to, you know, find attorneys or different people that can show me different way, because I feel, you know, that they owe wages to me you know, from the blueprint of structuring things for the program, then they didn't have a reason. They didn't give me a reason why, and they don't have to give me a reason. But the CEO did come in and talk to me and tell me why she thought, and she thought it was a bunch of baloney and this, that, and the third. And so I spoke with another legal team, minority team. He said, well, if the CEO came to you and said that it was, they was wrong, the board was wrong, and it was from a he say, she say kind of cliquish thing, he said, well, that gives you grounds there if the CEO comes back and say that. You know, you don't want to do that, but we have to find a way to keep, you know, them from using other formerly incarcerated people, you know, just to get the crumbs off the ground. And then, you know, you get rid of them because, you're going to go on to the next person. You need a new face now. You need somebody else's story that you can use to get a grant, you know. And it's just those type of things that you face. You know that, you know, you put in a lot of work. You know that you're drawing traffic to a bigger cause. And that's the movement, you know, from a shared lived experience. Like, I made a pact that, you know, when I came from that I didn't want to see anyone have to go through those things. And so I take a lot of licks, you know, so that I can figure out, you know, okay, if this happened this way, then I got to get up and do something else. My clients aren't strong as I am. They haven't been on the ground long enough to know that I don't want them to be impacted or hurt that they may go into themselves. And, you know, like I said, it's the holidays, thinking about being homeless, thinking about having to go to a homeless shelter when they're comfortable in the position that they are. They don't have to do too much on the outside, you know, brushing with people that are influenced, or right now they're not strong enough to be out, you know, in those type of areas that they would have to go to because they can't afford to go somewhere else. They would have to be in poverty-stricken areas where there's nothing but drugs and crime. And so I try to keep my clients out of those red zones, you know. So it's just, you know, it's very, you know, it's very, very heavy. But you learn at some point when you get a break, when you get things according to how you have it planned on paper, when you get some funding, when you get sponsors or philanthropy people that you can work with that understand the vision and understand the impact, not just in my city but worldwide. You know, you're able to do more when people will say, well, hey, you know, I'd rather be helping somebody versus saying, you know, well, you know, they came from prison, they deserve it. You don't know the story. You know, just because a person goes to prison, a lot of people when they meet me never think that I've been in prison. I sat in front of a guy at a policy meeting and he was talking this and talking that and what needs to happen. He's never, he's always had a silver spoon in his mouth. So when I spoke up and say, well, hi, I'm Kimberly Biggs, I'm a formerly incarcerated person, his eyes got big. He turned red in the face because let him see, he thought that I was an attorney. The way I spoke, the way I carried myself, and the way that I handled things, he thought that I was an attorney.
Gee.
So we have to be careful how we overlook the work and the help that will really help impact our communities. If we have more strong, if we have more leadership, we have more people like me that can go back into a community to say, hey, I'm living proof that this happened. And we have more people to understand that if I, as a philanthropy, if I help her and I can see the results, you know, that means I've done something truthfully to change the world, to change someone else's life, to help someone else have a better life than what they're living. But a lot of times people miss that. They can't get past, you know, the stereotype or the stigmatism that, you know, they went to prison.
You know,
I face that every single day when I'm knocking on doors for just like, you know, donations for my org. You know, you got attorneys, you got, you know, we got people who supposedly work for the state that's working to help. They won't even help, you know, just things like that.
You know, actually, you mentioned that he thought you were a lawyer. You know, one of the things that people don't understand, and this is very, very important, and I hope everyone's ears are open to this. Sometimes people think getting a piece of paper in a university is experience, is knowledge, and they feel so proud of themselves. But, you know, life experience is the best education that anyone can get. Because when you've been through these, you know how to relate to people. You know how to – I came from a family where I had – I was adopted as a baby by my adoptive father, but my mother and my adoptive father, I was from a very multicultural family background. I was a single parent. I was in a pretty much domestic violence situation at one time because it started out emotional, but it started to get physical. Mm-hmm. But I had enough sense to get out of that relationship after only a couple of years. There are people in these relationships to this day that have been in abusive situations for so many years. But I've also been able to help a lot of people that have been in domestic violence situations from my own experiences. I also advocate for the incarcerated because I know that it doesn't only happen with women. There are men out there that get abused as well by women. There are many that get emotionally abused. We heard about that young man that committed suicide because his girlfriend talked him into committing suicide when he thought he was in love with this woman and this woman was in love with him. We have many of those types in the prison. You know, I learned through people. I always say this. I want the audience to call in. If they don't agree with something I'm saying or you're saying, call in and speak out because mm-hmm. I do not want people that will go behind somebody's back and talk about them when they have the opportunity to speak directly to that person and condemn that person if the person is wrong. So I have learned throughout my life experience, you can't get a better education than that. You go for social work, you go to college, they teach you and they give you a piece of paper. They teach you nothing about cultures. And we're living in a world where so many cultures exist, even in the United States of America, representing cultures from every country in the world. But yet social workers are dealing with clients they have no knowledge about how they discipline, how they operate in their homes, even the food they eat, the way they... So they go into these homes, and a lot of times social workers remove children unnecessarily and put them in foster homes that are worse than their biological homes. So mm-hmm. we have a lot of these things when people are incarcerated, when children are taken from their families, we have to look at who is the person that is representing these families or these children. So when you mentioned that man thought you were an attorney, that's how much education you have and you've had from not only being incarcerated, but also the work you've been doing. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, to actually practice, you have to go and get that stupid piece of paper that so many attorneys out there have, and a lot of them don't know what they're doing. And that's why a lot mm-hmm. of attorneys go out for lawsuits, they go out for bankruptcy, they go out for all these things, but they're afraid to go out for the criminal justice because they're mm-hmm. afraid of corrections. They're afraid of the unions. So they're afraid to actually represent their clients. And there's a lot yes. of lawyers out there that are corrupt, a lot of judges that are corrupt. We have to look at all of this dynamic before our eyes. And we have to accept the fact, audience, the people that come out of prison have more education than many that are getting a piece of paper and knowing absolutely nothing because they haven't had the experience. And right. I truly, truly appreciate this, Kim. I try to let everybody that is volunteering in my organization to know they don't have to judge the incarcerated. They have to get to know more right. about them. Once again, families, right. it's mandatory minimum, FAM, which is international. FAM is encouraging everybody to contact your representatives, your legislative members, and keep encouraging, keep challenging them to go into the prison and talk with these incarcerated individuals, hear their stories, learn about them, and then fight for criminal justice reform. But don't fight for something you know nothing about because you don't want to meet with the people that are going through all of these tragedies. For those on the outside, support these people that are coming out and trying to do something with their lives and help others as well. Try to help them. Kim, I'm going to turn this back over to you.
Okay. And like I said, I would gladly coming in. I'm getting everything together to get back with you on the Saturday, Sunday show. I have a couple people in line that have gone through the system that are doing things in the community, you know, to give them a moment to voice, you know, what they experienced and, you know, where they are now in life and what could make their lives better. And just to kind of open it up into that spectrum of the world where people can have an outlet, you know, or feel okay having an outlet to say, well, hey, you know, Ms. Kim, this is where I am. You know, like you say, y'all have the virtual, maybe, you know, at some point do something virtual because I did a survey, and I've gotten over 200 people who are formerly incarcerated people that haven't been out in the last 6 months, and they are having some hard times. They're, you know, writing in. So I was just thinking about, you know, opening the panel so that people have a resource list if they're feeling heavy or discouraged, that type of feedback, that type of line that will help, you know, a lot of people who are impacted, but they just don't feel comfortable going to their local behavioral office because of the stigmatism. When they walk in there, how do people look at them? How do people treat them? You know, so we find all of those things to be a very pivotal point and a very urgent point, because at that point is where, you know, people either hold a fold. You know, either they're going to open up with me and they're going to talk about it, but if I mistreat them or give them a reason to feel like they're less than me or something like that, they may not ever open up. They may not ever go back to get help. You know, so having those type of conversations, opening up to those type of conversations, I think will be, you know, the new thing, the first thing that I'll do, you know, on the show in the beginning of the year. So just looking forward to doing that. Just, you know, taking it one day at a time and in great expectancy, you know, that everything that we will receive, you know, what we need to be able to move forward, and look forward to not having that type of, those type of things in the oncoming year, you know, being able to be more structured, have a couple of seminars for other organizations like myself to be able to help them, you know, not run into the roadblock. And get the help that they need, finding the help, teaching them how to make the plan, because I wish I had, you know, that one-on-one with someone, or I wish I could have afforded that, you know, having someone that could be a resource or have, you know, the blueprint to help me, you know, to be more impactful and have the funds by now. But I just do believe that everything happens in time. It also gave me an opportunity to, you know, bring awareness to, you know, the audience, to let them know what happens and how it happens, you know, being that I actually lived through it. And, you know, just making the frequency, having more people to hear and having more people to share, or having them to invite a couple people the next time we have the show, you know, just bring a few people, invite a few people, and, you know, just let us know of some things that you may want to know about, some topics that, or some concerns that you may have, you know, let Leona know, you know, so that we can, you know, get the, you know, the people that on the phone, or get some people on the show that can help answer those questions, so, or concerns.
Exactly. And I also have, like I said, I have Fridays and Saturdays open if anybody wants to use the studio to, you know, to talk more about these issues. I have Lawrence Drank on Sundays has the show from 3:30 to 4:30. Lawrence talks a lot about the issues that are going on, and he is the founder of the Legacy Program. Anaya Bett and Reginald Clements, a prisoner from wrongfully convicted out of Missouri, and Reginald Clements, a judge found him innocent years ago. He's on the internet. You can find the judge found him innocent, and he's been in for 20-something, 30-something years. He went in as a young man, and he's still in prison, although a judge found him. This is what we talk about when we talk about racism.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a young man that should have been released when the judge found him innocent. But we have this going on, and where are our legislative members in those states who should have enough sense to be able to fight for this young man and get him out? But we have plenty of these things going on in the penal system. It has to stop. This is what they call modern-day slavery. It has to stop. It really does. But again, the show, the studio is available to anybody on Fridays and Saturdays to talk more about these issues. And Kimberly, you mentioned something that I find very imperative, and that is to bring people on the show who haven't had their voices heard, whether they're out of prison now or still in prison. We want them to have a voice. And so they're always welcome, always welcome.
Yes. So I'll let you know for sure Friday or Saturday, which day, you know, that I'll take. And I truly want to be, you know, centered around my client base, you know, the people, but I'll let them know so they, you know, that way, you know, they can just say, okay, I can go this Friday or next Friday or the next Friday, so I can go ahead and have my calendar in rotation. But I'll let you know, give me a few days.
Okay, and then again, you every time you come on, you can bring someone on with you if you want, or others on with you. They're always welcome.
Okay.
You know, it's sad because a lot of times people that are in power, people that are influential, they could care less until it happens to them. You know, when something happens to them and their families, all of a sudden the laws start to change. Just like with marijuana, we have an issue in marijuana where even politicians are using or their children are using. So what happens? They finally legalize marijuana. But if they did it because they want to reform the prison and they want to legalize these things, why are we so have so many people in prison to this day who have been serving for years for marijuana, for uses like that? So they should have been released the day they legalized marijuana.
Right. Right.
But until it happens to somebody on the outside with their own family members, they don't care. They do not have a clue. You know, I reached out to some legislative members to help a loved one that's incarcerated. And as having an organization, especially national at one time, I know all the resources. I've been networking with advocates throughout the country for the last 20 years. But I contact the legislative members to get help, and they refer me back to one, Prison Illegal Services in Massachusetts, that has consistently been a problem for me, for my organization. They refer me back to those people. I have contacted those people, trying to be professional with them. To this day, they have not responded. Legislative members don't know that. But I'll tell you, in the past, every time I've corresponded with the Prison Illegal Services and I copied to legislative members, they responded because they didn't want legislative members to know how ignorant they were. This is how we deal with some people in legal areas. And ACLU is another one. They always have an excuse for not helping anybody. They allowed three people in Pennsylvania, they allowed three prisoners to die when I was begging them for help for these individuals that were crying out for help. After each one of them died, until the third one died, ACLU did nothing. And Leanna Washington, who was a senator, and I kept begging her for help, she waited until the last one died, the third one died, and then she gets before the media saying if she knew this was happening, she would have had an independent investigation and that the bodies were cremated. I emailed her to say the bodies were not cremated. Talk to the family members. We have people out there in politics. We have people out there with that have all this influence and have not a clue what's going on around them. Then people in society wonder why we have mass incarceration in the United States of America. Talk to your legislative members who are talking about criminal justice reform but have not even met with a lot of these prisoners. Some of them haven't been in a prison to meet with any prisoners. This is frustrating. People judging incarcerated individuals, when they should be judging the people who have political power to stop it, they have political power to make changes, they have political power to contact the Department of Corrections in any state. They're the lawmakers. Our legislative members are the lawmakers. But yet they're fearful of the people that they're making laws. It just doesn't make sense. And these law firms that don't respond to organizations, they need to be reported to the Bar Association, and they need to be reported to the corporate divisions for nonprofit organizations and corporations, and they will be.
Right. And
Kim, I'd like to have you give the audience your contact information, your website or whatever, and ways that they can help. Again, there's a lot of things that we can do virtually. We do not have to make calls. We do not have to leave our homes. We do not have to leave whatever. But I'm going to bring this one on right now. We have a caller, and would you like to state your name? Would you like to state your name?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello, Leona. This is Joe. How are you doing?
Good, Joe. I'm on a roll today. How are you?
Yeah. Well, I just got here, and I was listening to part of your roll, and you were talking about how you were begging the legislatures in order to help. And at the legislature, one of them lied about whether or not one of the incarcerated was buried or not. Look, the only way to get through to the legislature, see, you keep thinking that these legislatures have a heart somewhere in their body, or they really give a damn sometime down the road. They don't. They're there for power. The only thing that influences a legislature is bribery, blackmail, extortion, or threats of death. So unless you have an organization that's large enough to influence votes, they'll send you to and then refer you to every other kind of agency that they know of to get rid of you, but they won't do a thing. This is the way America works. This is the way all countries work. You have to have a certain type of influence. Legislatures don't work on moral grounds. That's my opinion.
You know, I was told by some advocates that these legislative members in our country that actually have investments in the city as well. Have you heard anything about that?
I didn't hear what you said. I'm going to have to turn my volume up.
I'm hearing an echo.
Are you? All right, it's probably me. I'm going to fix that in a second. In the meantime, why don't you repeat what you were saying, Leona?
I was told by some advocates in the country that a lot of legislative members have investments in the prisons, too. Just like a lot of these large corporations, a lot of these legislative members throughout the country also have investments in the prisons. And that's why they will only go so far when they're addressing their constituents, you know, request for help.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they have stock in a lot of the nonprofit businesses. So the more inmates that go to those prisons, the more money they make by keeping them alive. So, yeah.
Kimberly, do you have anything to say to any of this?
Well, I just agree. I agree totally with what he's saying. You know, having a nonprofit organization myself, and like I said, journaling about my life and how it happened, you know, ticketing, you know, in front of the governor's mansion, you know, because of my living situation with a felony conviction, I couldn't get housing, you know, but I go to my congressman or my senator that I helped get elected, you know, kind of ran their campaigns for them and different things, but I was left out in the cold. So I finally understood that it was no morale there. They didn't care. So it wasn't a point of me keep going in that route, you know, to get the help that I needed, you know, for expungements. And, you know, my charge that they gave me, they didn't expunge. Mississippi is still one of the Jim Crow states, you know, so it's just a lot, you know, that we go through. And I totally agree with what he said, you know, and it's going, and truthfully, you know, that's just what it will take to get them to move. It's got to be one of the things that he said, you know, before he actually gets emotional, you know. You know, so that's what it is.
Absolutely. Look, thank you. Most people, when they get into office, like one time, Leona, you said to me, you know, I should run for office. It's
you
a
should.
Nice idea. The thing is that when you run for office, you better have money behind you to win.
Okay.
I would run as an independent. I wouldn't have much money to spend on a campaign. And I'd be running up against the Democratic machine and the Republican machine. So it would be useless for me to run for office. There are organizations out there.
I was going to say, Brian Winters from Vermont, he was on the show a couple of times. Brian Winters used to be a politician. Now he's not. What he did, he founded an American Union, and he goes with any party that's going to be for the cause. But he's not into the political part anymore. He's just trying to – the cause is mass incarceration. The cause is global warming. The cause is immigration issues. So these are the things, but he like yourself, is not about the politics of it anymore. But I will say, if you ran for politics, any political party, you would get it because without having a lot of money. because people want honest people. People want people to run this country and advocate for your constituents, not just to get money out of them, but to get honesty and to get justice done. And that's what you're about.
And that's what we do, you know, for that type of thing. You know, when we find a person, you know, you got people like me. I don't just work just reentry. I work to get people registered to vote. You get people out to vote, why they need to vote. And people are really turning around. But then again, it comes back to the illegal things where the people come through and say, well, we'll give you this. People are sellouts. You know, we'll take that few hundred dollars to go out and vote in a different direction. That well, we've been out here preaching and giving them the information and what to do all day, and then they'll come back on the side and slide them $100 or $200, and then there it go. You know, so but I have to jump off, Leona, because I have a training at 1 my time, and it's about 3 minutes away. And again, you know, for anyone that needs to reach out, that telephone number that you can reach, a cell phone, is 404-386-5290, and that is From Prison to Purpose. We do have a GoFundMe that is listed up under From Prison to Purpose, helping incarcerated women and children. And then we do have a Square link, and it's also registered From Prison to Purpose. And we do have Cash App that's going to be up under Kimberly Biggs. $ Kimberly Biggs. And like I said, we do have to like January the 2nd, I think, with this campaign to come up with the, you know, the quota that we have, you know, to keep the living situation good. And anyone that can donate anything is greatly appreciated.
Okay. Thank you, Kim, for being on. We'll have you back on again. And I wish you luck with all of this. You have been a blessing, and you have been able to bring awareness of about a lot of things behind those prison bars as well. So I thank you for being
yes,
on
ma'am.
With us. And we will be in touch.
We'll continue to do it.
You take care.
I'll continue to do it. Thank you for having me. Bye.
Okay, Joe, what you're saying is, and what you're saying makes a lot of sense too. People want honesty. They want people that are going to be advocating for them, not against one. We have two political parties that are enemies, enemy number one, and they're just going back and forth. I am so sick of turning the television on to hear about this committee with this Trump thing. It's been going on so long, and anybody else would have already either been in prison or this case would have been closed or something. But it's taken up so much time, and it's about a lot of garbage because either the person is guilty or they're not guilty. Some people, they get a 7-day trial, and they're in prison for life and life without parole, or in some states, death. You know, it doesn't make sense. That's the injustice that's going on in this country. So if you ran, you would get the support of not only 2.3 million, but their families, the advocates around them, all the people that they know. You would get a lot of support. You probably wouldn't have to put up money at all.
I'm going to disagree with you. The thing is, people do want honesty, but most people don't really care. What they vote for is the man with the best, the bushiest hair, and the woman who's the prettiest. They may want honesty if it affects them, if it's part of their particular singular issues, but they will fall for the scheme and the scam of the slickest, most funded candidate. It happens all the time. So I wouldn't win anything. We have two people whose shows are on BTR that I go to. They've run. They haven't won. I mean, they ran for Congress. They haven't won. They're never going to win. I don't like to do just something. I'm a results-oriented person. I want to do something that gets results. I know the mindset of the American public. They're stupid, okay? Stupid, as in dumb, especially the younger generation, because they've been deliberately dumbed down by the school system. And, you know, they're dependent on the government, and they believe everything the government says. If you didn't believe everything the government says, then why are people bringing their kids to drag queen shows? Why are kids trying to transition from boy to girl and then trying to go back again because they realize the green, it's not greener on the other side? People are very, very easily manipulated by the media, which is state-run, just like in Russia. So, no, I wouldn't run, I wouldn't win, and I wouldn't waste my time. Now, I understand what you're saying. Sure, people want honesty, but they're influenced by the girl with the biggest smile and the guy with the, you know, the bushiest hair. That's the way America is run.
You know, I agree with you. I agree with you on that, really. I want to say this because, I've been networking with advocates around the country, but I'll tell you one thing. Massachusetts, it's almost about cliques. You know, it's almost about their peers. They don't have a mindset to work on these injustices with everybody. But if you have a problem with one advocate and they're in a clique, you have a problem with the whole clique. You have a problem with the whole group or the whole coalition. And before you know it, it's spread to another coalition. So you're having bits and pieces of people coming to you behind their backs to support you, but they're too afraid to support you in front of these people that they're connected with, if you know what I'm trying to say. I'm the type of person, if I like somebody, I'm going to like that person. I'm going to go along with them, even if I don't like them. If they're for the same cause, I'm going to work with them. But we're working around a lot of people that are so immature, they're unprofessional. As I say, I've been trying to communicate with this PLS, Prison Legal Services in Massachusetts. They don't even respond. But yet, if I copy to some of these politicians every time I write to them, they respond in a minute. It's happened in the past. But see, these people that are supposed to have knowledge, they don't even contemplate how people can be manipulated by an organization or a law firm or whatever. We live in, like you say, people are ignorant in this country. And we have to hear it from other countries about how the differences are in their countries compared to U.S. mass incarceration.
No, I didn't say ignorant. I said stupid. You're giving them the benefit of the doubt. Ignorance means that they don't have enough information. Stupidity means you've got the information, and you're still too stupid to come to the right conclusions. No, Americans are dumb, and I can't blame them. They've been brainwashed by the media, by the school system, by the professors at the universities for decades. Okay? So you need an organization that has thousands of people that you represent or somebody represents and says to your local politician, hey, Charlie, get your ass off the pot. If you don't do what we want, 2,000 people are going to have banners, billboards, ads, and go out there in the street and make sure that everybody knows that you are you're a bastard or a bitch. But if you don't have power and the force of a lot of people behind you, it doesn't matter how many times you write, you protest, you email, they're going to send back, you know, a nice little form letter and say, we're looking into this issue, Mrs. Jones. Thank you for your support. Bullshit. Okay?
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. You've been networking and running organizations for years. How come they ignore you? Because you don't have 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people who will say, when you say, hey, we're going to vote for, not for you this time, Charlie, we're voting for Mr. Davis down the block, unless you shape up. You represent us. Do what we want, or we're going to, if we can't get you out, we're sure going to make sure that you're going to have a lot of agita in your stomach for a long, long time.
You know what I'm about, though, Joe, and I tell volunteers this when they – I've had one volunteer one time said, you can't need volunteers too much because I didn't accept them for a reason. But as I told them, it's not about quantity. It's about quality. And I'd rather have very, very few friends who are sincere, who are for real, you know, who are honest, and who do not need, they're not that insecure that they need their peers that they know are wrong. So I'd rather have very, very few sincere, loyal, honest people advocating than to be having a whole coalition or 10 coalitions of people that are phony, you know, that are doing something because they're either in their cliques or they have a motive behind it. That's what I'm about. Not quantity, but quality. But
I had a coalition too. I had one for Ron Paul, and I can tell from experience myself that I would rather have volunteers, people who know how to do the job properly, follow orders, and are loyal. But when it comes to getting things done in terms of persuading legislatures to do what you want them to do, it's better to have an organization of 10,000 people who will do what you want, even if 8,000 of them you don't like and they're lazy bastards. But as long as they do what you want them to do in terms of influencing that legislature, that's what you need. I'd rather have 8,000 of them than 1,000 loyalists, and we make no impression upon the state legislator or Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Depends upon what you want. If you want great loyalty, then you have an organization of 50 people. If you want to influence state legislators to do what you want, you got to get as many people. You got to get them in the thousands. Even if, and let me tell you, I'm a libertarian, and trying to get libertarians to do what you want is like what they say, herding cats, right? But if you're, but let's say you're in Congress, Leona, right? You're in Congress. I come to your office. I say, hey, I want you to do what I want. Well, sure, I understand that. And then you find out I've only got 50 followers. Now, somebody else comes along, they come into your office, they've got 2,000 followers, right? Well, let's say 10,000. Who are you going to listen to?
You know, I know that you don't believe in God, you don't believe in the Bible, but I want to say one thing. In biblical times, years in ancient times, years and years ago, God used to tell the Israelites when they came up against war, they were always coming up against thousands and thousands of the enemies. And God used to tell them to get rid of some of your troops. Get rid of them. So they would go from maybe 1,000 troops down to 300. And God would say, that's not enough. Get rid of more. Because God wanted to let people know, you want to know if I'm real? Get rid of those people. Let me fight your battle for you. And that's one of the things. As a person, a believer in the Most High, there's somebody that's much higher than the leaders of this world, someone that's much, much higher. But in order for us to see his powers, we have to put it in his hands. So I would rather quantity is nothing compared to the
quality over quantity. Right. I know.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's my belief.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, people, especially now, because I see it, I follow all these things with the world news, with what I read. And we're seeing the signs right now. The year 2023, this upcoming year, is going to show a lot of people what they have been wondering about, what they have not known about all these years. They're going to see some things happening in this world that they're not going to believe. But it's going to happen. And that's what we need to focus on, is not cliques, not people we think are going to help us to get richer or get more popular with our peers. We're trying to get to the truth. We're trying to get to the injustice, the end of abolishing all the injustices going on in this world. Too many people are hurting. Too many people are hurting so, so badly. And people are taking advantage of that pain and sorrow and suffering that they're going through. And it's going to end. I still say you should run.
It will. It will. And it'll end with the destruction of mankind. So nobody wins and everybody suffers.
We'll see what happens. But I'll tell you again. You've been coming on the show. You've been speaking your piece. You haven't been hiding it. And a lot of people that listen, a lot of people that get out there and they talk, they're cowards. They're too afraid to come on and speak because they're afraid their peers are going to hear them and their peers might not like what they're saying or their peers might get upset that they're coming on. I don't know. But we live in a very insecure society in this country, very insecure. And I'm not about pleasing man. I'm not about it. But, Joe, we are out of time, and I want to thank you for coming on. As always, I love it when you come on because you get things rolling. And I just want to say anytime at all, you're always welcome to come on the show. And I thank you so, so much. And
even though
you don't believe in God, I ask God to bless you. I really do. Thank you so much. Audience, we are now going to be closing, and I thank you all for listening. And hopefully you'll be on tomorrow. I believe I will be interviewing Mariam Jacobs from the Netherlands. But please join us tomorrow from 1 to 2 o'clock. Thank you so much. Thank you, Joe.
Take care, Leon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.